Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the Mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. Today's program features live performances, including members of the Kiara String Quartet. We'll also get a preview of the next Humanities on the Edge speaker, a musical at the Stage Theater in Hickman, and the Art and Social Justice Week exhibits and events at the Sheldon Museum of Art. We'll start this morning with the director of Lincoln Choral Artists, Jason Horner, and board president, Margaret Beach. Lincoln Choral Artists will perform a concert on Sunday at 3 p.m. at O'Donnell Auditorium on the Nebraska Wesleyan University campus. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Thanks.
The performance on Sunday will feature a group of high school students, and just a few weeks ago you went to work with them. So who are those students, and what did you do while visiting them?
It's the Lincoln Christian School Choir, their auditioned group called Image, and it's 18 singers that are sophomores, juniors, and seniors, and they are singing a great group of songs that tell stories that link into our theme for this concert.
And the theme is Sing Me a Story.
Sing me a story.
Yeah,
yes.
Tell me about the program and how it ties into your theme.
Well, you know, this year we decided to go with the overall theme of family ties to music, and so our first concert is kind of based on how music is translated back and forth from generation to generation, and also to different communities through the kinds of songs and stories that they tell. So we decided to really just try and reach out into community, found the high school group, Lincoln Christian Choir, and they're under the direction of Kirsten Jurgensen. And then we also are having the Toasted Ponies, a great folk group, and we're excited about them. And then, of course, the choir. The Lincoln Choral Artists will have their part of it, too. And we're singing some great, great, beautiful, beautiful stories.
Now, speaking of those collaborations with both the Lincoln Christian Choir and Toasted Ponies, on your website, I noticed the choir collaborates with a number of other organizations in the community, Summit String Quartet, Tada Productions, a few other choirs. What are the origins and reasons behind those collaborations?
I think we need to collaborate as an artistic community, and it just opens up the spectrum from what we can do musically. It offers us opportunities to engage with the community in different ways and bring in different parts of the community that may not know us, and we might not know them. It's a great introduction.
That's really cool. Jason Horner is director of Lincoln Choral Artists. We've been talking about their performance tonight titled Sing Me a Story, or not tonight, Sunday, called Sing Me a Story. That's at 3 p.m. on Sunday at O'Donnell Auditorium. Also, Margaret Beach is here. She's board president for Lincoln Choral Artists. Jason and Margaret, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Genevieve. Thanks so much.
Still ahead, I'll talk with members of the Kiara String Quartet next here on Friday Live, the first of our live performances today. The Stage Theater in Hickman is hosting a production of The Addams Family, a new musical comedy, and cast members Amelia Barrett and Christian Cordona perform a song from the show for us now. This is Pulled here on Friday Live on NET Radio. Oh, a song from The Addams Family, a new musical comedy. We heard actors Amelia Barrett and Christian Cardona, who play Wednesday and Pugsley in the show. And that show runs tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday, and again next weekend, the 29th, 30th, and Sunday, November 1st. Amelia and Christian join me now to tell us a little more about the show. Welcome, and thank you for performing for us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
So fun. The Addams Family, many listeners may know, quirky, kooky. This is a comedy show with that Halloween twist. Amelia, let's start with you. How do you describe the character you play?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's fun because it's the Wednesday that you're expecting, dark and dry and witty, and, you know, but she's found love, and that's kind of what the whole song Pulled is about, is she's feeling this new spark of happiness, and what is this? So it's kind of a balance through the whole show, playing the normal Wednesday that you're used to, and this really excited in love Wednesday.
And Christian, how about Pugsley?
Well, okay, so originally I think Pugsley Addams is supposed to be played by like a 10-year-old.
Clearly you're not 10.
Right, yeah. And since I'm 22, I think we decided to take a little, like a different take on Pugsley this time. We figured that since Wednesday's grown up a little bit and that she's getting married, that we decided that Pugsley's also grown up as well. And so we decided to play with those like childlike aspects in the show and kind of try to make them a little bit more demented because they're coming from an older person, do you know what I mean? So yeah, yeah. Really, the whole show is just from Pugsley's perspective is just that he doesn't want his sister to go down this, you know, this path of good and, you know, happiness, and he wants to keep her for himself. So
don't do that.
So yeah, hilarity ensues and hijinks takes place. So.
Do you think there's aspects of these kooky characters that you identify with?
Certainly. I think that's some of the joy of the Addams Family, is even though they are silly, you can find things that are relatable. I mean, even just between sibling struggles.
Absolutely.
That's, yeah, or, you know, falling in love, or Wednesday's trying to keep this big secret about getting engaged from her mom, so keeping secret from parents. I mean, there's a lot that you can relate to.
Yeah. Sure.
And I've always been told I have a childlike charm, so...
Now, Hickman, where you're performing the show, it's a small community, but with a really nice space there at the Stage Theater. I wonder how you got involved with the show and if you've been in productions at the Stage Theater before.
This is actually my first show at the Stage Theater, and I can't say enough how much it's been so incredible. The cast is so awesome. Working with the directors, Robert is incredible. I've done shows around Lincoln before, and this has by far been one of the most fun ones I've done. So yeah, it's just been a great experience. I know Amelia's been in plenty of shows. Here,
so. Yes, I suppose I'm familiar with the space, and I've known Robert and Michael opened up the theater, and I have been in shows with them before the theater was even open. So once I found out about that, I tend to audition regularly. So it's like Christian said, it's just an awesome place to be.
Well, thank you again for performing for us this morning.
Yes, thank you.
It sounds like a really fun show.
It is.
Amelia Barrett and Christian Cardona play Wednesday and Pugsley, respectively, in the Stage Theater production of The Addams Family, a new musical comedy playing in Hickman both this weekend and next. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you so much.
Stay with Friday Live. There are more live performances, and we'll learn more about Art and Social Justice Week presented by the Sheldon Museum of Art in Lincoln. That's all coming up here on Friday Live on NET Radio. Thanks for listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. We're broadcasting live from the Mill Coffee and Tea here in Lincoln's historic Haymarket. Now, members of the Kiara String Quartet performing this trio, Rebecca Fisher, Jonas Sirota, and Gregory Beaver, performing one movement of the String Serenade by Ernst Dohnányi here on Friday Live on NET Radio. Of that five-movement work, the Serenade for String Trio by Ernst Dohnányi. Members of the Kiara String Quartet will perform that entire work and more on their concert in Lincoln tonight at 7:30 at Kimball Recital Hall on the University of Nebraska-Lincoln campus. I am joined now by Rebecca Fisher, Jonas Sirota, and Gregory Beaver from the quartet here to tell us more about that concert. It's great to have you here this morning.
Thanks. Always great to be here.
Thank you.
And with you.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for playing. It just fills the space with this sound.
It's fun to do it in here.
not a concert of solely string quartet music tonight. So how did you decide on the program for this concert?
Well, we wanted to include some of our friends at the university in this concert, and so we're really excited to be joined by flutist John Bailey and pianist Mark Clinton, and it's just going to be kind of a big party on stage. Not that the public is sick of hearing string quartets, but it is fun to kind of shake things up, and the Dohnányi is just... again, a party on stage. Well, have a good time.
It occurred to me that with some, you know, like woodwind quintets or string quartets or piano trios, like those are the most common chamber ensembles, and then you don't get a chance to hear some of the other great work that exists. So this is a great chance to hear that Dohnányi. I find that an interesting piece. I heard just in there some of that ethnic sound. It sounded like folk melodies in there. What can you tell us about this piece?
Dohnányi was a Hungarian composer. And the main thing that we know about this piece is that it's five very different kinds of movements, although the end of the last movement is very similar to the music from the first movement. The fourth movement especially has some really quirky sort of Hungarian-inspired things. The first violin imitates a cembalum in the last variation. which was like a hammered dulcimer. Other than that, he was, I think, very influenced by the composers over to the left on the map from Germany and so on that were playing composing very romantic sounding music. So it's very beautiful and quirky. So you can't get more than that. It's really fun.
It does sound really fun. And I like the idea of having five different characters in each of the movements there. The program starts then with an American work by Arthur Foote, a composer originally from Boston. What else can you tell us about Foote and his music?
He's a really interesting guy. Actually, it's funny. The big link in this program is Brahms, because we're playing a Brahms piano quintet, and both Dohnányi and Foote were huge fans of Brahms. You know, they were only, 20, 30 years after him, and they were both advocates for performing his music. Dohnányi performed it himself on piano, and Arthur Foote, really helped bring the performance of Brahms music to Boston. Foote was the first American composer who trained entirely in the States, not at all in Europe. First American composer of note. And he was a part of a group called the Boston Six that got together and talked about what they were doing and tried to, define a new sound. And it's beautiful music, too. This whole evening, actually, we're calling it a Chiara Soiree, because it's all fun, beautiful music that you might imagine hearing in a living room in the turn of the 20th century.
Yeah, and I imagine also playing with your colleagues. It's like getting together with friends.
Exactly.
Absolutely, and there might be a little treat on stage.
Yeah, there may or may not be ficus trees covered in Christmas lights surrounding us while we're playing.
Interesting. That'll change the atmosphere for sure. Well, as mentioned earlier, that concert program tonight will include John Bailey, flute, and Mark Clinton, piano, for an evening of chamber music with works by Arthur Foote, Ernst Dohnányi, and Johannes Brahms. Thank you so much for being here this morning and for playing for us again.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And thanks to the Mill, too.
Yes, absolutely. And again, that concert is tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Kimball Recital Hall in Lincoln. Still ahead, we'll have another live performance here at the Mill. We'll also hear about an Omaha Brass Ensemble being hosted in Lincoln, and we'll have highlights from our arts calendar. That's all coming up here on NET Radio's Friday Live. I'm Genevieve Randall. You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website, both to make plans and to add your event. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here are some highlights. The 22nd Annual Art Exhibit and Open Studios of Artists in Residence at the Art Farm in Marquette will take place this weekend. Also, a program called Sandhills Song will be presented by Otto Rosfeld at the Homestead National Monument in Beatrice. That's tomorrow at 6 p.m. And four Edgar Allan Poe stories will be presented in the style of an old radio show at the Westside Middle School Performing Arts Center in Omaha on Thursday and next Friday at 7 p.m. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio. While you're at our website, be sure to check out this week's Friday Live Extra podcast. Joaquito Dreyer has a film review, and you can listen to that at netnebraska.org/radio.
For 25 years, guitarist Peter Bouffard has played a key role in the overall sound of the Nebraska Jazz Orchestra, contributing original compositions and unique arrangements of familiar tunes from the jazz world and beyond. He anchors the rhythm section with his mastery of the guitar fretboard, whether playing a conventional hollow-bodied instrument or a guitar synthesizer. In the second concert of the NJO's 40th anniversary season, tonight at the Cornhusker Marriott in downtown Lincoln, Bouffard is spotlighted in a program called Strings Attached. Bouffard has been a faculty member of the UNL Glenn Corff School of Music since 1990. teaching jazz theory, improvisation, and performance, and directing jazz ensembles both large and small. He's also been a member of the Lincoln Public Schools instrumental music faculty since 1993 and was director of jazz activities for the University of Maine's Summer Youth Music Program for 18 years. As a professional player, he's performed with many area musicians, including the UNL Faculty Jazz Ensemble, the Faculty Jazz Trio, NJO bassist Andy Hall, and singer Annette Murrell. In 2007, he released a duo recording with bassist Rusty White titled Contra Factum, combining elements of jazz and classical music. Tonight's NJO concert is sure to showcase Buffard's prodigious big band composing and arranging skills. Over the years, he's contributed to the NJO band book with arrangements of Stanley Turrentine's Sister Sadie, the Jump Blues classic Is You Is or Is You Ain't My Baby, and a spirited take on the traditional folk melody Danny Boy. Lincoln Jazz Society continues its Friday Jazz at 5 series at the Vega next Friday with a 5 p.m. performance by saxophonist Patrick Brown and his quartet, followed by trumpeter Brian McCune and friends on November 13th. Nebraska Jazz Orchestra continues its 40th anniversary concert season tonight with a program spotlighting guitarist and composer Peter Buffard, beginning at 7:30 p.m. at the Cornhusker Marriott. For more information, follow the link on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org. For Friday Live, I'm Tom Einick.
Friday Live on NET Radio. We're broadcasting from the Mill in Lincoln's Haymarket, and there is more live music just ahead. The Aubin Music at First Plymouth season is underway in Lincoln, and the next concert on the series features the Omaha Brass Ensemble. That's Sunday, November 1st at 4 p.m. There's also a concert at First Plymouth tonight featuring the Plymouth Choir and coinciding with National Opera Week. We'll learn more about that. Jeremy Bankson, Drew Duncan, Tom Trenny are all here to fill us in on the details. It's great to have you all here this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Great to be here.
For being here. Tom, let's start maybe with the ensemble featured next weekend, or Jeremy as well. You can answer questions about that. Let's talk about who the Omaha Brass are.
Yeah, the Omaha Brass Ensemble actually is sort of an extension of the Palladium Brass Quintet, which is a group in Omaha. And they basically wanted to form an ensemble that would sort of do larger, more orchestral brass repertoire. And so a number of the players are folks that are regularly in the Lincoln Symphony Orchestra and the Omaha Symphony. And the title actually kind of sums it all up, really. I mean, fanfares, funerals, and all that jazz. So probably the most common piece and one that everyone loves is the Fanfare for the Common Man by Copland. Of course, everyone loves that piece. But there'll be a few other fanfares that are kind of bright and bring it to a nice opening. There'll be some funeral marches, though, too, when you think of some of the state solemn occasions and some of the larger brass ensembles that have played for things like that. That'll be exciting. Dave Sharp, who is an arranger and not uncommon to this area, is doing a new commission for the concert. And to round it all out, just so no one leaves feeling like they wanted something else, there are going to be a few jazz pieces. Dead Man Blues is a popular piece that people will recognize. The Funeral March by Grieg, Hungarian March by Berlioz. So there's a wide range of pieces, something for everyone, I think.
I really think that just speaks to the versatility of brass ensembles, more so than some types of chamber groups, I think. I don't know why that is, but brass ensembles are so versatile.
Yeah, yeah. You'll hear some bright rhythmic stuff and some lyrical stuff as well in contrast. So it should be really fun.
So fanfares, funerals, and all that jazz. And again, that concert featuring the Omaha Brass Ensemble is at 4 p.m. next Sunday. And then in just a few moments from now, we're going to hear a performance, which brings us to a project that you've been working on, Drew. Opera a la mode. That concert is tonight. Why a la mode?
Why not a la mode?
I like ice cream.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that we had a nice community event, and I always remember the community coming together for an ice cream social, kind of that atmosphere. So afterwards, we have homemade pie and brownies and ice cream after the concert. It's a great way to come out for a free evening and listen to some music if you're an opera lover, or if you want to get a little taste, this is a great concert to sample everything. We have Handel to Mozart and Tchaikovsky to Bernstein. So you get a really good smattering of the different kind of opera that's out there.
Now, for background to this concert tonight, the Plymouth Choir will be representing the Music Ministry of First Plymouth Church at the North Central Division of the American Choral Directors Association. And this concert plays right into that. What was the purpose for having this concert tonight?
This concert is a fundraiser. Though it's free, we're inviting people to make contributions, and all the proceeds will support the choir's trip to this conference you've mentioned. The Plymouth Choir is the only choir from Nebraska that's been invited to sing at the convention, and also the only choir related to a church or a place of worship. And so we're very grateful to get to represent our state and our sacred community in sharing in this way. So tonight we ask several of our choral scholars to step out of their choir robes for a moment and to take the center stage, and we sort of transform the sanctuary into the opera house for a brief moment. And I'm excited to participate by being the orchestra for the evening. A few pieces I'll get to play on the piano, but most of it on the lead organ, which it has an orchestral and operatic proportion of its own to add to the evening.
Absolutely. How was the choir chosen for this honor?
Well, there's any choir from Nebraska, the two Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, lots of choirs can submit an application, and you share a recording from each of the last three seasons. And fortunately, this time we met the expectations, I suppose, and we're so grateful to be chosen. So
excellent. Well, and congratulations to the Plymouth Choir. Thanks. On that honor. Tom Trenny is organist at First Plymouth in Lincoln, as well as artistic director for Aubund Music at First Plymouth. Jeremy Bankson is executive director of Aubund Music. Drew Duncan is a member of the Plymouth Choir. And Tom and Drew are going to perform for us in just a moment. Thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And again, that Opera a la Mode concert is tonight at First Plymouth at 7 p.m. And the Omaha Brass Ensemble will perform as part of the Aubund Music at First Plymouth series next Sunday at 4 p.m. Right now, here on Friday Live, performing live here at the Mill in downtown Lincoln, Drew Duncan, accompanied by Tom Trenny, performing Dein ist mein ganzes Herz, You Are My Whole Heart, here on Friday Live. Mein ganzes Herz, You Are My Whole Heart, performed by Drew Duncan and Tom Trenny here on Friday Live on NET Radio. You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Joining me next here at the Mill is Sharon Kennedy, Director of Education at the Sheldon Museum of Art, and Catherine Lee Wilson, Associate Professor at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln College of Law. Today through October 30th is Sheldon's Art and Social Justice Week, and they're here to tell us more about that. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. The week gets started with a workshop and music tonight. Give us an overview of how social justice and art will be addressed this week.
Okay, well, tonight's a great example because not only do we have an opportunity to get hands-on activism by creating your own T-shirt or button and with a social justice slogan, but you can also hear music that inspires, inspires in all ways from the Salem Baptist Church in Omaha.
Sounds great. And on Friday, then, jumping a few days ahead from now, Hank Willis Thomas will be here to give a lecture. He's an artist and an activist. What will be the topic of his lecture?
Right. So the title of his talk is After Identity, What? And I can say that Hank Willis Thomas is a huge social activist. He's extremely active worldwide. Sheldon just acquired one of his works of art that is an amazingly powerful piece. And so he's spending the day with us, but we'll be giving a lecture at 6 o'clock on Friday night, 1 week from today.
Yeah, you mentioned that piece of art that was just acquired by the Sheldon. It's titled Priceless Number One, one of his pieces. It really is a very moving work and difficult. As I looked at it, and as you read the words on top of this photo he's portrayed, and you start to realize what's being depicted, I just felt this pit in my stomach. I wonder if you think that expressing ideas about social justice are sometimes more powerful in art, film, or music than just in a lecture or hearing about something in the newspaper or something like that.
Well, I think you said it so well, because there's that emotive quality. And his is amazingly poignant. But so much of the work, I think, in this exhibition, from the Black Panthers to the Life magazine images by Gordon Parks and Segregation Story, are just so emotionally powerful that, yes, I think they can be extremely, extremely effective.
Now, on Tuesday during the week at 5:30, there will be a social justice and the law event. And how will that work?
Well, this will be a fast-moving opportunity to talk about the intersection of law and social justice. There's six professors, Eric Berger, Bob Schopp, Anna Shavers, Jessica Shoemaker, Brian Leppard, and Kristen Blankley, who will be addressing social justice issues in three ways, from a philosophical way, two, practically on a couple of different social justice issues, and then offering some solutions or avenues towards moving, unraveling these complex issues.
And there's a live interactive component of this.
Yes, we're very excited about that. Live Now is a social justice poll. You can enter it by going to go.unl.edu/social justice poll. And we're engaging the UNL community, and in fact, the entire community here in Nebraska, to respond to that poll. So go there, use Twitter, your text, your cell phone, or your desktop to respond.
It's such a unique way that we can do things now with the technology that exists so that people can take part. And speaking of that, for listeners across the state, there's also a live stream in a week from today.
Right, right. So the Hank Willis Thomas talk, which we are kind of crowning as our keynote address, will be live streamed statewide. So that'll be 6 o'clock on Friday night at the October 30th.
And I know that there's a lot more to this week, and we could probably take up the whole show with all of that. So we'll make sure that there is a link on our website, which listeners used to going to, at netnebraska.org, and just click on the icon there for Friday Live, and we'll be able to link through to more information about Art and Social Justice Week. Catherine Lee Wilson is Associate Professor at the UNL College of Law. Sharon Kennedy is Director of Education at the Sheldon Museum of Art, and we've been talking about Art and Social Justice Week. Free events each day starting tonight at 5 p.m. and continuing through October 30th. And again, you can link to that on the Friday Live page of our website, netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks so much for talking with me this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Humanities on the Edge series continues, bringing another visiting speaker. We'll learn more just ahead here on Friday Live. I'm Genevieve Randall. I'm Genevieve Randall. You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. There's a story about the discovery of a diamond just ahead and following Friday Live classical music on Morning Concert. Next, here at the Mill, I'm joined by Damon Pfister from the Humanities on the Edge series to talk about their next speaker. Good morning.
Morning.
Great to have you here. Zakiya Iman Jackson is on the faculty at George Mason University in Virginia in the English department and the author of several books. What is the topic of her talk this Thursday?
So the title of her talk is The Blackness of Space Between Meaning and Matter. It's a kind of evocative, poetic title. I think, you know, there's a famous line about how candidates campaign in poetry and govern in prose. Academics title in poetry, and if the audience is lucky, they'll speak in prose. Audiences at Humanities of the on the Edge lectures tend to be lucky. Our speakers are quite good, and we're very excited about this this particular talk as part of the larger post-human futures theme that is the topic of this year's speaker series.
Yeah, do you know how her speech might tie into your overall theme this year?
I do. So, you know, for a long time, scholars in the humanities thought that humans were separated from nature by tools of their own making. But a number of post-humanist scholars have sort of turned on that and suggested that actually humans are constructed by tools of their own making. An example from the great media theorist Marshall McLuhan might help this out a little bit. Marshall McLuhan famously defined media as extensions of the human body. So, for example, I'm wearing glasses right now, and without these glasses, I can't really do much of what we think human bodies do. In fact, I wouldn't really be able to do much of anything. My vision is just that bad. We can see cars or bikes as extensions of the human legs, right? Moving us around, extending what we can do. Mm-hmm. So post-humanist scholars have suggested that actually the body and technology are very much tied together. But as Jackson is going to observe, technology is not distributed equally. It is shaped by social identities. It's shaped by race and class. People who have access to, let's say, laptops and iPads and other things tend to fit a certain kind of demographic.
Or even cars in some cases.
And absolutely cars, right. I mean, the bigger the ticket item, the more it is shaped by markers of social identity. And so Jackson is going to try to sort of think about the relationship between post-humanism and technology and post-racialism in what I believe will be a fairly provocative way.
And that lecture is coming up on Thursday. I noticed that some of the past lectures and talks are up on YouTube. Humanities on the Edge has a YouTube channel. What outcome do you hope for by archiving all of those lectures?
That's a great question, and it's something that I would encourage listeners to just do a search for Humanities on the Edge, and you'll be able to find us on YouTube or various other places on the web. We also have a Facebook page, which is the best way to keep track of our all of our doings, and we post notifications of when videos are up. Our hope really is to, you know, simply archive these as resources for scholars around the world and for publics around the world to to learn from. You know, we have fantastic speakers that are at the top of their game, and it's a shame when you bring in these top line speakers and they speak, but then their speech dissipates. You know, and there's no preservation of it. And so one of the things that Humanities on the Edge has really been on the cutting edge of doing is recording these for future generations of scholars, of Nebraskans, of UNL academics and students and members of the general public.
And again, Zakiya Iman Jackson will speak on Thursday in the Ethel S. Abbott Auditorium. That's at the Sheldon Museum of Art in Lincoln, and that's at 5:30 p.m. as part of the Humanities on the Edge series. I've been talking here this morning with Damon Pfister. Thanks so much for telling us about the speaker coming this week.
Thank you.
Dracula is coming to the Lead Center in Lincoln. We'll learn more about that just ahead here on Friday Live on NET Radio. Listening to Friday Live here broadcasting from the Mill in Lincoln's historic Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. St. David's Welsh Society of Nebraska will host speaker Lita Powell Drake as part of their Contemporary Welsh Forum on Sunday at 3 p.m. at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Lincoln. I'm joined by Lori McAllister from the Welsh Society along with their special guest speaker Lita Powell Drake. It's great to have you both here this morning.
Well, it is extraordinary and nice to be here even though it's a rainy day. A foggy day in Lincoln Town.
Foggy day. I know that song.
I just wanted to show you how musical I was.
As you can tell, Lita is quite a character known for television appearances on 1011 as well as NET television. So what is the topic of your speech at
the forum? Something complete. And now for something completely different. Will you believe this? I got an email from Lori McAllister over the Lincoln Arts Council. And it's a good thing she sent me an email rather than call me because I would have laughed. She said, Lita, your name is Powell. Powell is a Welsh name. Would you be interested in coming to the Welsh Society's presentation at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church this Sunday and do a presentation on your Welsh history? And I went, ha,
oh, my.
My Welsh history. Yeah, I'm English, Irish, Scotch, and Welsh. Scotch, Irish from a mother, which accounts for the red hair and the blue eyes and mm-hmm. the fair skin. Mm-hmm. And my dad was British, a family from Cornwall. Wait. My father found the largest diamond in the world, the Cullinan Diamond, or the Star of Africa, which is in the Queen of England's crown and scepter and the jewel. There's the story. Bingo!
Ding, ding,
so
ding.
I called Lori, and what'd you say, Lori?
Oh, I thought it was fabulous. I had never heard that. Little did I know.
Yeah, who knew? How
little
would
did
we
anybody know?
Know?
Here it is. Oh, I have it here. Woo. If this were television, you could see it.
Yeah, right.
£1 pound, 33 ounces. It's 3,106 carats. And if you want to see the diamond, please come and join us on Saturday as we tell
Sunday.
The story.
But Sunday afternoon.
On Sunday from 3 to 5. And
yes.
It's free and all that kind of good stuff. But if you can't come, it's in Morrill Hall.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They bought this diamond.
They
didn't buy the real diamond.
Yeah.
In 1909, which was 4 years after my father found the diamond in Pretoria, South Africa. He was a worker in the diamond mines. And he was paid for it, but not given credit. The manager of the mine was credited with finding it. But my papa found this. And I want to share the story, which is a fabulous story.
So I know that people should go and listen to the story, but we have listeners all across the state. And I'm just wondering, did you know your whole life this story about this diamond?
But you see, when you're a child and you don't pay attention, my father was born in 1879. My father, 1879, not my grandfather. So he was an old man, you see, by the time I was born. And he was almost in his 70s when I was born, and I have a younger brother. So we were too little to pay attention. We didn't know, and it wasn't until after you get mature. And Dad died back in 1965, so the details of the story weren't there. My mother tried to prove it, but we had no provenance. See, in 1905, they wouldn't have had, my dad didn't have a certificate saying that he was paid for fine. There was nothing. Mother wrote to, mother, but so pathetic, she wrote to Ripley's, believe it or not. You know, and they didn't believe it, you know. And I've been to the Tower of London and seen the jewels, which is where they are. And, you know, the first time I went, there's so many people who come to see the crown jewels that you can barely see it. You know, you then they put it on a moving walkway. And so there was a guard there, lots of guards there and guns and all that stuff. So I went to the guard and I was going to say, my father found that, you know, because he'd think, yeah, we got another loony here.
The guards.
But I just said, oh, tell me the story of, and he really had this story pretty correct, other than, you know, my dad finding it. So, but it's there. If you ever go to the Tower of London, in the crown, the state crown that the Queen wears, you see her all the time wearing that crown, and the big cut of the diamond is in the scepter. And so every time I see Queen Elizabeth, I say, well, those are my jewels. Should have been, shoulda, coulda, woulda, but no provenance. You've got to have provenance, and we had none of that.
Right. So, Lori, this is part of the Welsh Society of Nebraska. How many events does the Society hold each year?
We do 4 events each year, and for many, many years, well, the Society began in 1910. It was formed in Omaha. It's one of the oldest ethnic culture groups in our state, so wonderful history. And for many, many years, the focus has really been on reviving and keeping alive that history, which, of course, is very important. Just last month, we held our annual Gaman Vagani, our community sing, which is very traditional. But as with any culture, it is a living thing. And so we decided to set aside our October presentation to focus on contemporary Welsh culture or Welsh connections to Nebraska. So this will be our second one. Last year was the first one we did. We celebrated Dylan Thomas centenary, the 100th anniversary of Dylan Thomas, and that was just a joy, and so very happy to continue, and I feel like we've knocked it out of the park with our speaker this year. It's just wonderful.
Well, and yes, you'll also be talking about your latest book.
Oh, thank you. Yes, The Calamities of Calamity Kate. You know, the history of Channel 1011's All the Children's Program. That has been a lot of fun. So I'll dress as Calamity Kate, wear that old 50-year-old outfit, squeeze into that, doesn't fit. And you should see the wig. You see what, and it wasn't even a good wig back then. You should see what a synthetic wig looked like after 50 years. That's pretty tacky, but okay, the stories are fun, you know, and so I try to share that. Yeah.
Lots of fun memories there. I've been talking with Lita Powell Drake. She is guest speaker, sharing her father's story as well as stories from her book, The Calamities of Calamity Kate, a history of Nebraska's children's television shows, as part of the Contemporary Welsh Forum on Sunday. That's presented by St. David's Welsh Society of Nebraska. Lori McAllister is with that group. And that presentation will be Sunday, 3 p.m. at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Lincoln. Lori and Lita.
And it's free.
And it's free. That's an important point to
exactly
make.
Exactly right.
Can you say goodbye in Welsh? What do you know that word?
Gosh, I know good morning, bore da. I guess a goodbye could be the toast that I know, which is yechida, to your health.
Yechida. Whoa, that sounds Jewish.
To both of your healths as well, if that's plural.
Thank you.
Dilk.
Thanks. You can meet the actor coming to Lincoln as part of a production of Dracula next here on NET Radio. Friday Live. The LA Theater Works production of Dracula will be performed at the Lead Center tonight at 7:30 with a haunting set, stunning costumes, and live sound effects. Actor Graham Outerbridge is in the role of Arthur Holmwood in the production, and he joins me to talk more about that. Good morning.
Morning, Genevieve. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, there have been many adaptations of Dracula over the years. Can you give us a short description of this one and where your character comes into the story?
This particular iteration of the story stays very close to Bram Stoker's book. It was adapted for the stage by Charles Morey from that story. And in this story, Arthur Holmwood is a young British lord who finds himself sort of entangled with Dracula because Dracula hones in on his young fiance, Lucy Westerna. So by that, I get really, you know, drawn into the story, and I have to take my vengeance on Dracula.
What do you like most about your character?
Yeah, I get to be a very, very brave guy in this play. I get to be the one that sort of leads the search parties when we go looking for him, and really take the reins and take control of the situations. So it's been really fun to get to play that kind of character.
Tell us just a little about yourself. How did you get involved with LA Theater Works?
Well, funnily enough, one of the other performers in the show is a good friend of mine, and she has worked with LA Theater Works before. And when this came up, she said, you know, you should really audition for this. I think it'd be a lot of fun. And I looked into it and got in touch with my representative, and I said, hey, I really want to go in for this. And she said, great, I think it's a fantastic idea, and sent me out to audition for it. And from there, it was a process of auditioning, callback, until they called and said, hey, we'd love you to come do this.
You also have a comedy TV show that you're a part of. How do you keep the balance between the TV show and then touring with this production?
A lot of times with film versus theater, film is going to be shot out in a very specific amount of time. A lot of times what you'll be able to do is you'll be able to shoot your show, and then you have a lot of time until the next set of scenes or episodes that you're shooting are going to take place. So in those periods of time, you can do things like this and go tour around the country and do a fun play.
What do you like about the story of Dracula?
I think it's we talked a lot about it in rehearsal, and it's really sort of the first horror story that was put out there. And it's wonderfully descriptive, and it's scary, and there's something about the Victorian era that just seems kind of really ripe for stories about ghosts and vampires and haunting and stuff like that. It's just a fun story to see unfold, I think.
I've been talking with actor Graham Outerbridge. He is in the role of Arthur Holmwood in the LA Theater Works production of Dracula. They'll be performing at the Leeds Center in Lincoln tonight at 7:30 p.m. Thanks for taking some time to talk with me.
Thanks for having me on, Genevieve.
And you can link to more information about this and other events at our website, netnebraska.org/radio. Just click on the icon for Friday Live. Coming up on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black and Classics by Request. Be sure to visit our website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Fuse Coworking for providing our Wi-Fi hookup, James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.